second item today will be HB 134 supplemental appropriations. Looks like we will start at 1A with administration. We will try to work our way down through the list. Any members have questions or concerns, please bring them forward as we get here. The presenters would give us their name, their serial number.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
PC and I just said serial
number. My name
we will move along.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eric Swanson. I'm the Admin Services Director for the Department of Administration. And the first item we have today in the slow track supplemental is a request for $76,100 of statutory designated program receipts for the Division of Finance. These funds come to us through a part of a credit card rebate program that we have with our state credit card through First National Bank of Alaska. Growth of the credit card program, together with some more favorable rebate terms that were negotiated with this contract, have resulted in rebates in excess of what we have budgeted. And Mr. Chairman, we're requesting this funding in order to enable us to maintain staffing at the current level in the Division of Finance for the remainder of this year.
Okay. I just have one question, Eric, and that would simply be that in your statement here, the component where health insurance and retirement cost increases are not funded, is that still part of the Section 76, or is that not intended to be there?
Well, no,
at least the governor has money in his budget for purchasing cost increases.
You're absolutely correct, Mr. Chairman. This was funding that wasn't costs that weren't fully funded in the FY05 budget.
Okay. Are you going to speak to 1B?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The next item is a request for $125,000 of receipt supported services for the Division of Motor Vehicles. This funding is needed for to cover some increased costs for consumables related to deployment of the digital driver's license. We slightly underestimated the cost of some of the consumables, and we also underestimated the amount of them that would be going out in this first year. It's turned out that a number of folks have come in to get a digital driver's license that would not have otherwise needed to get a new license in order to get the new digital card. And we also are experiencing the need for some additional purchase of these materials to have a stock at the end of the fiscal year with which to carry us through into FY 2006. That's a first year phenomenon that we won't be experiencing going forward.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We bet this is receipt supported services. Is that, are we making up the cost of this additional cost? Are we passing it off through collecting fees for issuing licenses? Is that the receipt source?
Through the Chair, Representative Hawker, currently the Division of Motor Vehicles collects well in excess of the amount that it is budgeted or authorized to spend in its budget, and this would come from those receipts.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the next two items, rows 70 and 71, I believe, were covered the last time that the committee took up this bill. That's the Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender Agency.
They were.
The next item then is 1E, Division of Risk Management. Mr. Chairman, here we're requesting $1,350,000 of general funds to pay costs related to two property loss claims that the state is dealing with. The first one of those, Mr. Chairman, has to do with damage that was done to the Fairbanks Correctional Facility late this past year. There was an attempted jailbreak where a person commandeered a front end loader and drove through a couple of fences and then crashed the loader into one of the buildings of the Fairbanks Correctional Facility and sustaining considerable damage there. And so the $1 million of the $1,350,000 would be to pay for that claim. The second piece of this this request is for $350,000 to cover damage that was sustained by the Fast Ferry Fairweather during this past winter as well.
Chip, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Swanson,
for your information, it was two cells that were damaged. I went over and looked at it. Those cells cost $75,000 each to build at the time they were constructed. And the fence that was torn out of there is just a double fence, and it isn't very big. So my question is, it seems an awful lot of money for what little damage was done there. I noticed for about 2 or 3 weeks as I drove by that facility after it was damaged, there were 24-hour-a-day vehicles running, watching the fence, and also watching the road in front of the building. So I just wonder if someone could look into the cost and what the costs truly are.
Through the chair, I would be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the next one is the actual reduction that we're proposing for the current year for satellite infrastructure. As you may recall, last year you encouraged our department to see if we could achieve a better rate for what we pay for the satellite over which we broadcast some of the public broadcasting programming. And although we were unable to get a lower rate locked in prior to finishing up our budget last year, and since that time we've been able to do that. And actually, Mr. Chairman, I believe the initial submission here in the spreadsheet indicates a $500,000 reduction. We have since amended that figure, got a little overzealous in our attempt to show a savings there, and the actual amount that we can reduce that is $300,000.
And the reason I brought it to the committee is because they are asking for more money here. And that's a good thing. And that is in the amended version. Everybody should have the $300,000 instead of the $500,000, which was the original amendment that they asked for. So,
Actually, Mr. Chairman, there is one more section that pertains to the Department of Administration, and that would be on line 84 of the spreadsheet. It's under fund capitalization. Section 7C, I believe, is that.
We're probably different page, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, line 93.
Yeah, 93.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a request for a total of $6.243 million of general fund to be appropriated to the Information Services Fund. Mr. Chairman, as you know, the Information Services Fund is the source of funding for our Enterprise Technology Services Division for its operations and capital budget. We have, over the past several years, depleted the Information Services Fund by several million dollars. This was due in part to our experience with the telecom partnering agreement, where we were counting on cost savings that that did not materialize in that contract. Since that time of that we disentangled with the contractor, took back our network, and are attempting to get our infrastructure properly built back up, and so that we can maintain that infrastructure going forward. This funding will enable us to not have to charge back rates to our customers higher than they have currently budgeted for. Mr. Chairman, I should also mention that this funding mechanism involves taking the SATs and two-way radio systems out of this chargeback for this year and next, and funding that with general fund while we take the time to get that infrastructure built back up and also figure out a sustainable chargeback methodology going forward. And Mr. Chairman, I do have the ETS Director Stan Herrera here with me if committee has questions.
Any questions? Eric, is this going to be an ongoing issue, this disentanglement? And if it is, best guess on how much longer and how much more money?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we do have a request in our 06 operating budget for approximately $3.6 million for SATs. Disentanglement in and of itself is probably not going to be an issue going forward, but certainly the funding of IT and telecommunications services for the state of Alaska is a big issue for us going forward, and it's one that we're trying to figure out, again, a sustainable charge methodology and funding mechanism for this whole enterprise going forward.
No other questions? Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next, we will move to line 82, Commerce.
First page on your right hand.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Joellen Hanahan, Director of Admin Services, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. And this afternoon, the first item we have is a 158.2 general fund request for the Qualified Trade Association contract. This is the difference between an estimated amount and the actual amount that was paid to the Alaska Travel Industry Association. And probably the easiest thing to say about this is it probably should be moved to the ratification section.
Please, any questions?
What's the line item, please?
Line 82?
Or 74?
74.
74, if you don't have any amendment. You should have the amendment.
I don't have that. Four staff work.
Well, it's not on the amendment that I had the last one that we were talking about, so I moved to the main supplemental, so 158.2.
I mean, do you have the February 28th version? I have the February 23rd.
Yeah, this is the February 7th version. That's
yeah,
what I have there.
I'm working on February 7th.
I have a February 28th version, but it doesn't track with the numbers you were giving me, so that's why I was asking.
Let's take a brief at ease. For ease, we'll go to the February 7th edition of the supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can I get that?
Okay.
My favorite part. Corrections. Anybody there? We'll move on to Eddie in education.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Karen Rayfield with the Department of Education, and with me is Eddie Jeans, our Director of School Finance. We have four items before you in the regular supplemental bill on Section 4A. It would be the first one. It has to do, it's a request for $265,000 in post-secondary receipts. This is attributed directly to their loan servicing costs. As you may know, they are one of the mainframe customers. They have seen increased loan volumes over the past several years, They've also enhanced some of their electronic services, and additionally, they have received an increase in the rates for mainframe services. So the combination of those resulted in this request being before you today. The $265,000 is more than they can absorb within their current budget, and it is a mission-critical component of the student loan system in the state.
Any questions?
The second item, Mr. Chairman, is 4B. We're not actually asking you for additional dollars. This is a money that is remaining in the appropriation for the current year. I will ask Mr. James to go through the schedule that should be in your back up there that shows the difference between what was in the budget projected and what the actual enrollment and entitlement is for the public school funding program.
Is this the lapse money that will stay in the education fund once we get that passed and set up?
Through the chair, Representative Meyer, I'm not sure because this is being returned at this point in time. But in the future, I believe it would remain in the fund. That would be the intent.
Okay, very good. That's what.
Library operations.
Mr. Chairman, this particular request is for $30,000 in general fund. It's in relationship to a job class study that was conducted this year on our professional library positions. 14 of those positions were recommended for a one range increase. That the effect of that study took went into place January 15th. Those costs were not anticipated in our 05 budget. We have asked for an increase in the governor's budget amendment to adjust for those increased personal services costs in 06.
Just for clarification, you asked for the job class study, the library class study.
Mr. Chairman, we have this particular request has been on the classification sections list for a number of years. We had asked for a look at our professional positions in both the library and the museum, and with the new capacity that HR has with their consolidated classification, they did get to the study. We just didn't know when that was going to happen, what the result of it would be in order for us to have prepared a request for your consideration last year.
But there was no misconception that it was probably not going to cost you more money.
We did not anticipate that. Mr. Chairman, there are a couple of related sections, if I could just briefly speak to those. In 7A, you'll see a fund capitalization having to do with an additional $800,000 to the debt retirement fund. And then back farther in section 16A, you'll see a fund source change. What has happened for our school debt reimbursement program is that part of the funding for that comes from the cigarette tax, the school fund revenue. That revenue was short, $800,000. So the increase in the debt retirement fund is being covered by the additional funds in 7A. So it's a fund source change in 16A to deal with the shortfall in cigarette tax.
Okay. Any questions? Seeing none, we'll move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
For the record, Mr. Chair, my name is Tom Lawson, Admin Services Director with Fish and Game. We have one item in front of you. It's Section 5, but it's line 80 on your February 7th spreadsheet. This section fixes an error in the FY05 operating budget. The section allows for the roll forward of FY04 year-end funds of test fish receipts for all of the Comfish regions instead of just the Southeast region. We've had this language in the budget, the roll forward language for test fish receipts in the budget since FY03. Without this fix, the Division of Comfish will have to harvest additional resources this year to make up the revenue to cover the programs that are funded with test fisheries receipts.
And as a comment, would rather not see that happen. But Representative Wyrock.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, not see additional test fish?
Not see additional test fish.
Did this have to do with finfish and shellfish in Southeast, or just which fisheries are we talking about?
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, the way that the language was put in the operating budget, it's only the Southeast region that was allowed to roll forward the unexpended balance of funds, and it was actually meant to be at the appropriation level, so all the regions could roll forward any balances that they have. I don't have that information right in front of me in terms of which fisheries, but I can get that for you.
I was just concerned because I read in the Anchorage Daily News there's litigation over proposed harvest on aquatic farm sites by the department, and I'm not sure if the aquatic farms are going to be part of the test fishing or common property fishery, and whether any of this is going to support the litigation the state's involved with over the aquatic farm. You don't know, probably.
Actually, Jaron Bruce is in the audience. He might be able to.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jaron Bruce. I'm the Deputy Director for the Division of Commercial Fisheries. And through the Chair, Representative Whitelaw. The openings regarding the Sweet Duck Farms that you saw recently in the Common Property Fishery, it's not a Department of Test Fisheries.
So none of the test fisheries have to do with bivalve fisheries?
Mr. Chairman, I'd want to double check. I don't believe so, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Representative Weimer. I don't believe so, but I'd want to check the list and get back to you on that. But it deals with a number of fisheries in the region. I don't know if the bivalve fisheries are included there. I don't think they are, but I double check for you.
I just don't want to prejudice those parties, the state or the private sector, by somehow influencing the outcome of the litigation by saying that funds are dependent on the legislature. Test fishery operations. That's all, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. As long as you get the information back in on this question, we'll be satisfied more or less. Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a common concern or even criticism of test fisheries that they're used as a source of revenue instead of just what they're originally intended, which is you're going to test them and you might as well sell that product. Can you sort of answer that criticism for me and tell me how I would know as these develop? It's about 600,000. Is that the total amount, 612,000 of test fishery income for last year?
Through the chair, Representative Croft, as I understand it, the lapsing money at the end of FY04 is about $600,000.
Because of that, we wrote this, we could only get it. 200,000 of Southeast.
Correct. And we're authorized in the FY05 budget, we're authorized to expend approximately 2.5 million in test fish receipts. So that total 600,000 is very important to us, and we, at this point, we have no intention of harvesting, you know, any more if we don't have to, but that 600,000 is important to the programs that are funded.
So 2.5 million, and then there's a six, so it's about a $3 million income stream?
No,
about.
Excuse me. The $600,000 is within the we're budgeting that within the $2.5 million authorization.
So we have about a 2.5 million test fishery. How do I know, as somebody whose job it is to sit here and make sure that we're doing the right thing, whether it's truly being used as a test fishery or whether it's being used as a revenue generator? What number should I look for? Is 2.5 the right number? And if I see it at 5, I know we're using it for the wrong purposes. How do I do my job and answer that criticism of test fisheries?
Through the chair, Representative Croft, it's my understanding, but I probably would want to work with Jaron and get back with you, but it's my understanding that approximately $1.2 million is actually revenue generation. So
About half directly related to the testing function, about half to pay for various functions.
through the chair, test fish projects are a mix of projects that pay for themselves and some don't. So there, so those projects that do generate excess revenue, that money will go to pay for projects that don't. And we have a test fish SOP and a relationship with the industry in each of the regions where there is a test fish fund, where we work with industry. We can't, I can't say that industry always supports every single thing that is done with them, but we make a major effort to make sure that the industry does support the test fish projects out there. And if there is a controversy, we take it to the Board of Fisheries and provide a public forum for them to work to discuss things.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Thank you, Representative Kraft. Is anyone here?
Thank you.
I would like to speak on it.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Dan Spencer, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Public Safety. I believe the next item on your list would be Section 6, line 81 on the spreadsheet, which is fund capitalization for the Fish and Game Fund. This section would appropriate about $108,000 worth of interest earned by certain deposits into the Fish and Game Fund. Dating back to FY98, the legislature has appropriated fines and penalties related to enforcement of the Fish and Wildlife Statutes, Title 16, into the Fish and Game Fund, and then that money is then appropriated from the Fish and Game Fund to the Department of Public Safety and Law, about 88% public safety, 12% Department of Law, for wildlife enforcement and prosecuting these things. In the past, there has been an assumption that interest accruing to that was included, but legislative audit has correctly pointed out that interest is not explicitly addressed in the appropriation. This would simply correct that.
No questions?
Mr. Chairman, we have two other items in this. If you will look to Section 14A, which I believe is line 109, is an amendment of a capital project for federal funds. This relates to a capital project we have where we are in joint enforcement agreements with the National Marine Fisheries Service. They contract with us, go out on the boats, and we also do some dockside inspections for them as part of our, in addition to our normal operations. And so they have indicated to us that there is additional work they want us to do. They have funding for this, and the reason we're asking for it in supplemental instead of waiting for the capital budget is we would like to get going sooner than later on that when the money is available.
Questions?
Mr. Chairman, the next one is Section 14B, which is an appropriation of $225,000 of federal receipts for a crime scene examination enhancement project. This is an appropriation that Congress made shortly before the end of the last calendar year when they were wrapping up. This will allow us to get some training to both state and local law enforcement folks to improve the examination of crime scenes. It'll also allow us to get some technology and do a better job and a faster job of processing some of the crimes and other evidence.
Stay tuned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Stay tuned. Fund capital. Item 84, line 84, 7C.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Joan Browning with the Office of Management and Budget. 7C, we've already talked about.
We talked about that, but I need to supplement.
7B is just a catch-all section to appropriate any lapsing balance of federal unrestricted receipts to the debt retirement fund.
That's right. We usually do that.
That's
sorry, I was sort of asking you. That's a standard sort of budget item.
Just like we're looking at the labs.
Okay.
Thank you. Let's go to 8A, line 85. 86, 87, 88.
Keep going.
Chairman, for the record, Janet Clark from the Department of Health and Social Services.
Section 8A, as Ms. Frasca described, is one of the F505 windfall items that the governor is proposing for the Department of Health and Social Services. 8A, 8B, and 8C are parts of the same effort and parts of the same project. It's a request in total for $4.5 million of general funds to develop a comprehensive substance abuse prevention program focusing on children and adolescents. This effort has been developed by our Division of Behavioral Health to try to get ahead of the substance abuse problem in Alaska. They have identified 3 or 4 programs that the federal government has helped produce in other states that are evidence-based, outcome-based programs that we'd like to replicate in the state of Alaska. Mr. Bill Hogan is here to talk about each one of those proposals, and again, I would urge you to consider 8A, B, and C together as part of the $4.5 million package.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Bill Hogan. I'm the Director of the Division of Behavioral Health in the Department of Health and Social Services. As Mrs. Clark indicated, this is our a substance abuse prevention package. As all of you know, Alaska has a significant substance abuse problem. This is highlighted in a report that I just received from the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, dated February 14th of this year, where it indicated that Alaska has the highest percentage of illicit drug use of any state in the country. 12% of Alaskans have used an illicit drug within the past month. And that's looking at young people ages 12 and older, all the way through the adult population. We have a significant problem that impacts all aspects of living in Alaska, whether it's little children, kids in school, adults, or the elderly. What we're proposing is a multifaceted substance abuse package that looks at a number of different things. The first is what we're entitling leadership initiatives to keep children alcohol free. This is really an effort to address the underage drinking problem. Mrs. Murkowski is involved in this effort nationally, is a big proponent of our initiative. And we think it's extremely important to ensure that young people don't start drinking, particularly young people before the age of 13, because research indicates that if they do, they are more likely to develop a serious alcohol and substance abuse problem later. The second aspect is called Reach Out Now. It's really a mentoring program for 11 and 12-year-olds. It's a school-based educational approach, and it's again designed to address the problem really before things get started. The third is entitled Building Healthy Futures. It's focused on preschool and Head Start programs and kids in those programs. This is a family-based intervention. As I'm sure all of you know, substance abuse problem is not necessarily an individual problem. It is a family problem. And we recognize again that in order to change behavior and reduce the likelihood that kids will not develop substance abuse problems, we need to work with them at a very early age. We also plan to implement a statewide multimedia campaign using a number of different media resources, including television, radio, etc. And then finally, we want to address the local options issue. We want to actively work with villages to help them determine whether or not they would like to go dry, damp, or some other option. So again, I want to reiterate the importance of prevention, and I absolutely understand that it is incumbent upon us to be able to produce good outcomes. As Mrs. Clark had indicated, the programs that we're promoting and asking you to support are based on national models. They are best practice models. There is evidence base to show that they work. We have evidence to show that prevention, substance abuse prevention programs do create savings in the long term. For every dollar spent on prevention, depending on the program, up to $10 can be saved in substance abuse counseling or treatment later on. I thank you for your support, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Walter.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My only question is, are you going to work in concert with the wellness courts? Is that your idea at all with this?
Representative Holm, through the chair, I think it's important to recognize that, yes, this particular effort needs to be part of an overall effort to reduce not only incidents of substance abuse, but to ensure that individuals who do have a substance abuse problem and who may be involved in the therapeutic court system are getting the right kinds of service. So, yes, it's a critical piece.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, sir. Bill, just we're back at full committee where we said we would be about a week ago in subcommittee. Could you explain the additional money that is in the FY06 budget proposal that is part of the same request now that's here that's been bifurcated?
Representative Hawker, through the chair, are you referring to the money for the fetal alcohol spectrum disorder program?
The $1.5 million.
Yes.
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, yes, in the FY06 budget, the department has recommended that we use $1.5 million of our high-performing bonus dollars from our TANF program, our Welfare to Work program, to provide additional support for these programs. So, indeed, Representative Hawker is correct. It has been a bit confusing that the budget has been somewhat bifurcated, that the general funds are in the supplemental and the federal funds are shown through interagency receipts to this program in the FY06 budget. These particular items, as requested, have an FY06 lapse date attached to them and are part of the overall program. So the effort for this part of the budget is a total of $6 million.
So this is, basically we're looking at what's been called the prevention initiative. I'm close enough to $6+ million initiative that is being, for being asked like $4.5 million up in the supplemental process. And just an aside as far as we've had the conversation, I'm not quite sure the supplemental budget's the proper place to initiate new programs, but that's something for the committee to decide. This is largely an alcohol program. There's some components in here for statutory rape and a couple of other side issues, but this business of putting new money into alcohol prevention up front, I mean, are we not putting any money into alcohol now, or is the state investing money in alcohol treatment prevention programs?
Representative Hawker, through the chair, we do have some money currently going into substance abuse prevention programs. Yes.
Representative Hawker, yeah, that amount is approximately $800,000 in state general funds. And we have, I'd have to check the numbers, I don't have them in front of me, but a little over $1 million in federal funds going through prevention programs.
And how much in other alcohol treatment?
Those are the prevention funds, if that was your question.
No, so in total, how much are we investing? We raised the alcohol tax a few years ago, and that money was supposed to be going out to deal with these problems. What's happening to that increased alcohol? Are we using that someplace else, or what happened to it?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, those funds are going into what is now our integrated behavioral health, primarily treatment grants that are through a myriad of providers throughout the state.
And are we seeing tangible results from that investment?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, and I'll have Mr. Hogan talk about that a little bit more. We're currently receiving for the first time some outcome data related to some work that we've been doing to develop a data system related to outcomes for behavioral health clients. And I think Mr. Hogan can talk about that data, the first baseline data we've seen in some time.
Representative Hawker, through the chair, we, as Mrs. Clark has indicated, we do have some preliminary outcome data. The first is related to what we are calling productive activity. This we have seen a 60% increase in productive activity for individuals entering our behavioral health system. And by that, I mean people engaged in volunteering, actually going back to work where they have perhaps not been able to work. church service, subsistence activities, etc. And so what we are seeing initially is if somebody comes into our system and they are very incapacitated, are really not engaged in any sort of activity, we've seen an increase in 60% of our individuals from between 10 and 40 hours a week. We're also seeing a change in the reduction in physical health problems. Again, as I know the committee members know, if you have particularly a serious substance abuse problem, you also have serious physical health problems. We're seeing a reduction, about a 70% reduction in physical health problems with individuals entering our system. We're seeing a 70% reduction in people reporting that they do not have basic supports or basic enough money to live and provide basic shelter. And again, we're thinking that that indicates that some of those individuals have been able to go back to work and are leading productive lives. I think it also probably indicates that at least in some instances, some individuals who perhaps could have benefited from public assistance or at least getting on public assistance. And then finally, we're seeing a reduction in homelessness, about a 21% reduction in homelessness. So I think, Representative Hawker, this is preliminary data. It's on about 4,000 individuals, but we are at least being able to produce some outcome data where we have not been able to do that previously.
Two directions here. One, you emphasized at the beginning and the end of your presentation, this was preliminary data. How long has it taken and how much does it cost to get this data? How much have we spent of the alcohol money to get this data that you're talking about?
Representative Hawker, through the chair, we are able to get this information as a result of a federal grant that enabled us to develop a web-based management information system. It will allow and is beginning to allow all of our providers, even our smallest providers in villages, to submit information to us, outcome data. And so at this point in time, it has been solely financed by using federal dollars.
So where are we spending our alcohol dollars?
Representative Hawker, through the chair, alcohol dollars are being spent for alcohol treatment, substance abuse treatment.
You seem to indicate this federal grant indicated great progress, apparently, as a result of spending these alcohol dollars that we can't put our fingers on here.
Representative Hawker, through the chair, I can get you the exact amount of money that's being spent for substance abuse treatment.
The point is you're seeing positive results, and I'm just wondering if you're seeing positive results from it. How do we further justify spending this money? And I go back to this, and here we're looking to spend new general fund, largely new general fund money, in fact, entirely new general fund money in the supplemental. Isn't there still a fair amount of reserve money left in the alcohol fund itself from the alcohol taxes that is not being spent?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, I did not bring my sheet that keeps track of how much we have in the alcohol fund. In the FY06 budget, we are requesting $17.2 million in alcohol funds appropriated primarily for alcohol treatment. As far as the balance in the fund, I can get that to the committee. We keep track of that on a regular basis. I just can't recall what the balance is in that fund.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just there are so many, especially for a new person, it's hard to track, and I see the way Representative Hawker is struggling, but perhaps it's even tougher for somebody that's been here a while. But was there an overview similar to what the university gave earlier or what President Hamilton gave on the result on the overview of HESS and the results we're getting, and I just missed it? Or I mean, is that something that we've done?
Through the chair, Representative Kelly, I think in the House Budget Subcommittee, Representative Hawker, we probably had 15 committee hearings.
Something to that effect at 7 a.m. every one of them.
And we also had several committee hearings in the HESS committee where Mr. several parts of this overview. So we have provided overview material.
Okay, I just, because we split up the chores, and so it would be helpful to me if I could get the slides for the kind of the hilltop look at the things that
Representative Hawker's done, kind of the results orientation thing. Thank you.
We can do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions?
Now, if I could just follow up on one, I think it's relevant to the subject.
Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I know they say these questions are not in any way an indictment of the efforts of the department, but we did have testimony in that subcommittee meeting that, you know, the long list of recurring grants, particularly that go out in the behavioral health field statewide. I didn't bring that list with me, but, you know, we can go through it, and there's all this for, you know, fetal alcohol here and mental health here and this and that and the other thing there. And, you know, that number is a pretty good size number, and, you know, for lack of it. Just, you know, even just in the simple behavioral health grants line, it's some $20-odd million. We had, you know, acknowledged testimony that we really weren't doing performance evaluation of each of those grants, that in some ways, in some cases, and certainly not with your concurrence, you did not believe it was a good thing. These were just becoming entitlement funding to organizations statewide. I've had folks in my office saying that they just Xeroxed the previous year's grant application, sent it to the state, and sent them a check. My greatest concern is that proven performance, accountability, getting our money, making sure we're getting our money out of what we're already spending before we start a whole new series of what could become entitled programs. Any thoughts on that?
Representative Hawker, through the chair, I appreciate your concern, and that's exactly where I would like to get. I would like to move towards performance contracting, frankly, rather than grants, with a clear expectation that we as a state are purchasing outcomes. The current system of how it's funded is anachronistic, if I can use that term. To move the system, we have 230 grants currently going to mental health and substance abuse providers. That's actually an improvement, believe it or not. We have integrated some grants. I had 330 2 years ago, so we have made some movement there. But this is a tremendous amount of work to change the system. What we don't want to create is a system where it collapses because people are not able to produce the kinds of outcomes that we're expecting. So we're trying to do it deliberately. I absolutely understand that this is where we need to go. Philosophically, this is where I want to go. It's taking some time.
You know, I'll take the risk of speaking on behalf of this entire committee that anything we can do to help you bring our anachronistic system into the 21st century, we would be very happy to entertain any suggestions you have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Polk.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that point, I guess my question would be, were I to check on whether your programs are useful and whether or not they really have some methodology whereby you're checking on them. One of the words that I've heard many times used is recidivism. And that is a very important word when it comes to treatment. And I haven't heard you talk about recidivism in anything you do. You talk about 60% production activity or productive activity. And my question to you is, does that mean you have a 40% recidivism? Does that mean, you follow what I'm saying? I mean, what are we talking about here in terms of, as Representative Hawker says, we want something quantifiable that says we're putting money into a program and these are the results we're getting out of it. We'd like to make sure that we can track them with some clarity.
Representative Holm, through the chair, that's an excellent question. Again, this is very preliminary data. So what we are seeing is that there's been a positive change in 60% of the individuals. There's been a less dramatic change in 40%. And so that could lead you to the conclusion that perhaps we're only being effective, at least in this particular performance measure, in 60% of the cases. And then I think it's a very legitimate question to say, why aren't you more effective? What's going on with the other 40%? We are just beginning to analyze the data. And I am more than willing to continue to come before the committee and the legislature to give you an update on what we're learning.
Well, I appreciate it. If I could just follow up, Mr. Chairman, I guess my comment is if we're spending $17.2 million of alcohol money that's generated by those who have taken the choice to imbibe, that it's important that I think that we look at it from in those terms, that we have those performance measures, if you will, in place that allow you to actually do that before we add more money into prevention programs that we're not necessarily sure those prevention programs are justifiable just yet, or they're not incorporated within this total project. Because it seems to me, I think as Representative Parker was saying, these really need to be bound together rather than be separate units. I mean, you're looking at one where you need education, and you do the education so you don't have the problem to begin with. So they work in concert with one another. And then you fund it with the people that have the right of refusal. They have a right not to take the drink, or they have the right not to huff, or they have the right not to do different things that they're doing. So I guess I just urge you to kind of have it in some quantifiable situation where all of us can look at it better. I mean, I think there are none of us who do not want to have, we know what the cost of alcohol abuse is. We know what the cost of to our families in this state. We know what this cost is to us societally, but it would be very helpful to us to know what to do to help you.
Representative Holm, through the chair, I appreciate your comments, and I think this goes to Representative Kelly's question about an overview. What we want to have is a system that starts with prevention, has some early intervention before the problems become too serious, has a good treatment component, and then finally supports people in recovery, because that's what we need to get to. So as part of my overview, I did present that continuum of care or system of care, and I'd be glad to share that with you.
Matt, appreciate it very much.
Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With this new prevention, as it relates to young people, in those communities that have wellness or healthy community efforts, are you working with them with these new dollars so that you have a partnership in these efforts?
Representative Jewell, through the chair, if we are able to get the dollars, and again, I would ask for your support, it is certainly our intent to build on what's already working in communities. And it's my firm belief that the interventions need to occur with the individual, the family, and the community itself, and that the solutions should really come from the community. I don't want to sit here and lead people to believe that somehow the state has all the answers, or that all of the funding has to come from the state. We're really looking for communities to help us tell us how to solve this problem. This is a huge problem. So I think the simple answer is yes, we want to build on what's already working.
I know you don't want to hear from me. Sorry, Mr. Chair. I just dawned on me something here. You said something to the effect that 2 years ago you had 330 grants that you were giving to providers, and now you have 230 grants. I'm going to ask you a funny question, but it's a question that I think you should at least have an answer to, or at least you hope you have. We hope you have an answer to. And that is this. How do you know these are the most effective providers, and what do you measure them by?
Representative Holm, through the chair, what we will measure them by is their ability to produce positive outcomes. As Representative Hawker and others have suggested, we have not been able to do that historically. That we have, I think, the culture, the provider culture, is if I've gotten a grant 1 year, then somehow I'm entitled to getting the same amount ad infinitum, whether or not I produce anything. And that is the major culture change that has to occur in communities. And that's what we need to do. We are not there yet.
Thank you.
And probably echo Representative Hawker's comments. We will help you every way we can. Let's move on to the next slide.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. The next item is Section 8D. Mr. Chairman, this is a request for $194,100 in general funds for the Division of Juvenile Justice to pay for court-ordered costs. This particular item ends up in the
years ago, we had a budget component in our regular operating budget called court-ordered costs. It was $500,000. The legislature actually reduced that in the budget and said, rather than just having an estimate every year of what these court-ordered costs will be, we'd like you to come back in the supplemental budget process and show us your actual costs. We don't need to appropriate an estimate every year. So, Mr. Chairman, what we have in front of you is the actual, up through the date of the supplemental request, the actual costs, as well as some estimate to carry us through the end of the fiscal year. Within the backup, we have provided some examples to show that these are all court-ordered costs for every individual adolescent included in this request. So if you have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer.
I don't have a question. Nobody else? Let's move on to the next item.
All right. Mr. Chairman, the next item is Section 8E, which has a couple of different components to it. These are reductions in our caseload related to, first, our adult public assistance program. In the last couple years, for those who are new to the legislature, the Department of Health and Social Services provides a cash supplement to those individuals who are on SSI, and it's called the Adult Public Assistance Program. It primarily goes to seniors and those who are disabled, and it provides them a cash benefit so that they can remain independent in their own homes. For the past many years, this program has been growing at about 5% a year. It's a primarily general funded program, so every 5% increase had a general fund increase to it. In FY04, we started a program to look at ways to contain the costs of this particular item. And we've actually been very successful in lowering those individuals who go on what's called interim assistance. Part of the adult public assistance program has an interim assistance program that allows those who are waiting for disability determinations to get some cash assistance. What we did is we just through one staff person, are doing some upfront medical reviews of those individuals who apply for interim assistance first. In the past, those reviews had been done at the end of the system through a determination through voc rehab. So in moving that review up front, we've actually seen a real reduction in our caseload to where we're averaging now considerably less than that, about 2.4%, 2.9%, which is a dramatic decrease. So the major reduction is over $2 million in general funds that we're able to bring back to the legislature to offset the supplemental. The second reduction is in a program called General Relief Assistance. This program has actually been in existence since statehood, 1959. This program provides a small amount per month, $120, that can go for emergency shelter for someone who actually has an eviction notice or the utilities might be cut off. They can apply and get this assistance. The primary use of this fund, though, is for indigent burials. The state still has a program to actually provide indigent burials for those who don't have any family, who cannot bury themselves, and that's 80% of what this program is. But be that as it may, the caseload, if you can say that, for burials is less than we projected, and so we're providing $185,000 that can be reduced in this program.
We have longer longevity than that.
Could be.
8F.
Mr. Chairman, 8F, again, is one of those FY05 windfall programs that has an extended lapse date. It's a request for $1 million for a new grant program called the BASIC Grant Program. BASIC stands for Building Alaska Through Successful Initiatives and Communities. These grants will fund collaborative, community-based activities that promote and protect the health and well-being of Alaska by addressing basic needs such as food, shelter, and other needs. This would be a statewide program rather than focus on one or two communities. We're seeing some increased needs, particularly in food banks throughout the state. We do not have a grant program that's totally focused on this end of the spectrum. Mr. Bob Butkane is here to also talk about this particular program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am Robert Butkane. I am with the Department of Health and Social Services. I am a project coordinator with the out of the commissioner's office. The basic grant is, as Mrs. Clark has indicated, a program that would leverage resources to provide support for health, food, shelter, and other needs. As a concrete example, there are a number of community coalitions throughout the state that participate in job training. Some people will provide GEDs, some entities will come together in this coalition to provide job readiness training. Some organizations will come together and make their thrift shop available for suit clothes so the person can present themselves in the marketplace. If any of you have shopped at a thrift shop, you will notice that the shoes come in two sizes, 5 or 14s. And when a person is getting ready to enter the workforce, a thrift shop set of shoes isn't really presentable in a way that helps them leave a favorable impression with prospective employers. One example of what we would use a basic grant program for is to give money to a coalition to help fill in some of the gaps that we can't address or meet in some other way. Another example of this in the community of Anchorage, the Thanksgiving Blessing Program. As Mrs. Clark had indicated, the demand on our food service programs has increased over the past several years. This year, that coalition of a number of community organizations and faith groups ran short of turkeys. The state was able to find money to allocate to this coalition for the Thanksgiving blessing to complete the food boxes so that everyone who they serve had a turkey for Thanksgiving. It's about making money available to support the combined resources of community groups and coalitions to fill in those basic vital gaps in health, food, shelter, and other areas. I can go on, but I will stop.
Any questions, Representative Hawker?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the designated social services questionnaire. Human services matching grants. We've now got basics as well as HMSGs. Why do we need a new program when we've already got a grant program in place to put state money into community projects and efforts?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, the Human Services Committee matching grant serves three communities in the state of Alaska. You have to have a population of over 50,000. So the municipality of Anchorage, Fairbanks area, and the Matsu Valley are the three areas within the state that are served by that. No other communities qualify based on the statute that limits participation to more than 50,000.
And then, so we've got this existing grant program affecting large cities. 2 years ago, you guys lobbied strongly for us to eliminate those grants. And frankly, I took a lot of slings and arrows lobbying or keeping, working to eliminate those grants in the budget. Now you're coming not only, keeping that in, but adding another $1 million grant program to our portfolio. Can you explain the change in philosophy here?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, I think in the governor's initial FY04 budget, the governor had recommended zeroing out that particular grant program. However, in the amended budget, the governor requested funds back. He heard from communities that the Human Services Community Matching Grant Program was an important component of the service delivery. Those grants go to municipalities, and municipalities decide how to allocate those funds. So there definitely was a change of direction in FY04 and FY05, and I think that the governor's office was convinced that that program provides a good service to those large cities and believes that this basic grant program will also provide a great service to the smaller communities throughout the state.
Yes, yeah, so I recall a large part of the argument for removing or eliminating the matching grant program was that this was not an essential state service. And I'll be honest with you, I still have a hard time accepting, no, mind you, benevolency is a good thing. Poor people, hungry people are not good things. And I'm not making any statement here that denies that position. But is it an essential and fundamental responsibility of the state of Alaska to make sure every Alaskan has a turkey for Thanksgiving?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, I believe that it is certainly a state service to provide the opportunity to look where there are problems in communities, and that's what this program will do. Whether it goes directly to your question, I'm not certain that it's a responsibility to make sure everyone has a turkey for Thanksgiving, but to look to where there are problems and provide some solutions, yes.
Thank you. I do appreciate your time. Thank you, sir.
Representative Hall.
Two statements, not quick statements. Chicken in every pot. Well, a turkey, I'm sorry. And if my wife comes to see you, she doesn't need any more shoes. Thank you.
Would that be the 14th or the 5th? Since I don't believe I've met your lovely bride. Let's move to 93, if there's no other questions.
Yes.
Or excuse me, 92, which is 8G.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
No. Yeah.
No, 91.
That's true. Go ahead.
I believe you're talking about 8G.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, that's a request for $122,100. in general funds to cover the cost of the Advisory Council on Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. Administrative Order Number 221 established the Governor's Advisory Council on Faith-Based and Community Initiatives in the Department of Health and Social Services. This council will jointly serve to facilitate communication and collaboration between faith-based and community organizations. To get the council started, Mr. Chairman, four departments basically ponied up money to initiate the council. Those four departments are the Department of Health and Social Services, the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, Department of Corrections, and Department of Labor. This particular supplemental request would pay back those three departments that provided funds to get the council started. The Department of Health and Social Services will be using part of our high-performing TANF funds in FY05 to pay our share of the council. So this particular supplemental is basically to pay back those departments who provided funds to get the council started. And Mr. Butkin can talk about the work of the council.
Thank you. The reason that this administration has adopted a position of support for faith-based and community initiatives is because the payoff that that support brings to benefit the state. This particular program would have some very specific functions, including single point of contact to organize and disseminate faith-based community initiatives information, to act as a coordinating force to bring coalitions together involving both faith, community, and governmental entities, to provide technical assistance in the form of providing grant writing, helping to establish a nonprofit status with the Internal Revenue Service, to provide training to board of directors of these nonprofits so that they in turn can help support the service organization of a particular group. And lastly, to help train and inform government staff, what is okay and what is not okay with regard to faith-based community initiatives activities. You might say that, well, faith and community groups do give. Yes, they do. There are some incredible examples around this state where faith people, faith communities have come together to make contributions to the betterment of their communities to meet needs that are not otherwise met. But what we're talking about is a way to do business differently. If you always do what you have always done, you are always going to get what you already have. If we do not help faith organizations increase their capacity to serve and to compete in the human services marketplace, then we will always have what we have now, small, dedicated, committed servants meeting needs within their communities, but never taking it beyond where they're at right now to be more effective and efficient in the way that they serve. Faith-based community initiatives is about increasing organizational capacity for local community-based groups to come together to serve in partnership with the governments to meet the needs that are falling through the cracks. As an example, connected autonomy is not a natural concept to most government, tribal, city, faith, or community organizations. But connected autonomy is key to maximizing resources of each individual group. Teaching government and faith communities to talk with one another, to translate the language, the perspectives that they have to the world, is what the Faith-Based Community Initiatives Office will do. Teaching connected community, connected autonomy. In teaching organizations at the community level to write grants, we increase their ability to compete for funding that is already available. As an example, today on the federal government grant website are two grant notices that would be available to faith-based community initiatives organizations. One is a drug-free community support program. Another one is a community-based problem-solving criminal justice initiative. If we can increase the capacity of our local organizations to compete for these kinds of monies, we are able then to bring to the table opportunities to leverage these resources to fill in the gaps that we cannot meet as a department, or that you cannot meet as a legislature, in terms of dealing with the finite resources that we've got to answer the need. What we're asking for is money to support an effort that will work with local groups to increase their capacity to serve, to make an investment. What's the payoff? I'll use an example of Love Inc. in Fairbanks. Under the TANF program, we were able to provide them with approximately $45,000 in grant money to work with people who were in the welfare program, the Welfare to Work program. Most of those people are single mothers with children who were developing job skills and entering the marketplace. Most of them did not have any means of transportation. Love Inc. came along and started a ride-share program, where one person was able to take phone calls from people who had time and vehicles, match them with women and children, organize this ride share so that these people with cars and time were able to get together with people who needed help getting to their job sites, to the social worker, to all of these different places. They made a match. What we found in that example is that for every $1, for that $45,000 that we contributed to them through the federal TANF program, they provided over $300,000 in transportation costs if we would have tried to buy those transportation services directly. Beyond the $300,000, which is roughly a $1 investment for a $7 return, beyond that capital return is what might be called a social capital. So that the person with the car might be a little bit older, mature kind of person who has been through life and knows how life is supposed to work, working with a young woman who is just trying to find her way into the world of work, so that you have this opportunity for auntie, for grandpa, for uncle, for big brother to sit down and start talking and giving some practical, common sense support and guidance to this young woman to deal with all the things that we get to deal with when we move into the workforce for the first time. A social capital that, frankly, you cannot buy. You could not allocate sufficient monies to us to get that kind of return. The Faith-Based Community Initiatives is going to capitalize on what we have in place now in a way that will hopefully reduce reduce the demand for these other cost services down the road as we leverage these existing resources. I encourage you to make a policy decision to support the governor, the lieutenant governor, and this administration in this initiative, the faith-based community initiative. Lastly, I will say that at the federal level, there is a growing momentum to make monies available to faith and community groups. If we equip our organizations with the capacity to compete for those funds, the expected outcome is we will bring more federal dollars into this state to meet the needs. I'm open for questions. I have service at 10 o'clock.
Thank you, Representative Stoll.
I'll try to keep my hand. Is the Lieutenant Governor still involved in this commission?
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Hawker.
And I'll keep it quick. You're running up against a wall. What's the ongoing anticipated operating expenditure for this commission?
Through the chair, we have approximately $420,000 requested in the 06 budget. And as Mrs. Clark indicated, this is a supplemental request to return funds to the participating departments for fiscal year 05.
Yes, so allow me the latitude to just suggest that the $400,000 operating, $315,000 general. I have the disadvantage or the advantage on you with the budget in front of me. And I appreciate your reference to the good work of Love Inc. And my mother-in-law serves on that board, so I declare that as a conflict. But it's obviously a perfect example of leveraging public funds. A huge leverage. This proposal, again, this is one of those new initiative sort of things, as long as it also goes back to the general fund expenditure, the $4 million proposed, $6 million proposed for the alcohol initiatives. This is just pure general fund, no matching. Is this the highest and best use of our resources? We could take the same $6.5 million that's available here, use programs that are still available, although there's always a risk that the programs will be able to use this money, and put $12 to $15 million on the streets providing good work. Is it really the best thing for us to do, just to invest in general fund programs?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, if you could tell us which federal programs we could match to get the same outcomes in prevention and intervention as well as community involvement, we'd be happy to go and apply for those with those matching dollars.
Tricky answer. And that's looking for intervention. I'm thinking treatment money. We've got problems and programs on the streets that, as you said, you know, we've got people that are demanding, need services today, but we do have federal programs. Like I said, I'm not in any way indicting the goodness, the intent of the prevention program, but we've got problems on the street that just haven't been dealt with. And it's a question this committee is going to have to wrestle with, which, as we at the subcommittee did, we handed it up to this committee, and here we are.
Thank you, Representative Hawker. Let's go on to A-H. And it is our intent to get to the two items on corrections, and that's where we will stop for the day, and tomorrow we'll take up the remaining parts of the supplemental.
All right, Mr. Chairman, 8H is a request for $150,000 for receipt supported services for our Bureau of Vital Statistics office. This is a supplemental request to allow the Bureau of Vital Statistics to spend the receipt supported services that they earn to offset some costs of ongoing operations, including the lease costs that we were able to absorb last fiscal year. We do have a request that is in the House Budget Subcommittee recommendation of $300,000, very similar to this particular supplemental item.
No questions. Thank you, Jen.
I have one more item, Mr. Chairman, so that I don't have to come back to this particular bill. We do have a ratification on Section 19A related to the FY03 Medicaid budget. It's a ratification for $13,390,029.73. Mr. Chairman, a year ago I was in front of this committee and we had a ratification of $22 million for FY02. The ratification for FY03 is similar circumstances that we had a gap in what we expected our fair share program receipts to generate and what they actually generated in FY03. I can tell the committee that we do not have a ratification for FY04, so we will not have to be back in front of the committee for that particular year.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And just if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hawker.
My very efficient staff answered one of the earlier questions, and it looks like the balance is approximately in the alcohol funds that was carried over from the prior year and has kept the same issue, about $3.7 million. So,
we'll double check.
Yeah, $3.7 million sitting there in the alcohol funds.
We will look into it. Thank you again, Janet. Thank you, Department. Mr. Corrections. We thought we were just going to get to bypass you today.
Well, thanks for not doing that. That's great.
Two issues, 3A and 3B.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Antrim of the Department of Corrections. Item 3A is an area where the department took a 7% reduction for FY05. In the amount of, the total amount of the reduction was in the neighborhood of $509,000 from our supplies. We're asking for a $350,000 supplemental to replace that. I think it's interesting to note here, too, that of that $509,000, $490,000 came from the Division of Institutions. We will absorb the balance between the $350,000 and the remaining amount here. This relates to a deployment of technology, an electronic e-commerce system, as they're called, and we're hoping to have the system online to realize savings. We have not been able to do that for a number of reasons I can go into. We're still committed to doing that e-commerce project, but it's just taking longer to get off the ground. So we hope to realize those savings in that neighborhood in FY06.
No questions.
Would you like one?
Next item.
Item 3B is a $75,000 increment for fuel cost increases that will be spread out through all of our institutions.
Is that the total cost of your fuel increases? Or
no, Mr. Chairman, actually the total cost is somewhere in excess of $100,000, so we're absorbing the balance again between those two areas.
Okay.
Charlene Griffin, Acting Director of Veteran Services. We have one last item. 19C is a ratification for the parole board in the amount of $62,129 for FY02. It was a let's audit recommendation that we come in with ratification for this. There were $62,000 worth of charges for the parole board adjusted to the out-of-state contractual component. The parole board was never funded to handle hearings in Arizona, which was the primary cause of these overruns.
Okay. Seeing no questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And with that, I do appreciate members staying around to try to get through the supplemental tomorrow, Friday, 1:30, we'll go ahead and take up 134. We should be able to get through the remaining issues that we have on the list. And with that, if there's no other questions, we'll shut down the meeting and we'll go on to other things. With that, thank you. Thank you.